You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Moving on, Bridgewater-Raritan Regional School District in New Jersey. Now, they had a data breach, and that occurred between December 10th and 12th and exposed the names and social security numbers of district employees and others who are on the district's insurance plan, according to basically local reporting, MyCentralJersey.com. Former employee records were also exposed, according to Patch, another publication. So heads up to you, Bridgewater-Raritan Regional School District employees, past and present. Moving on, let's head on over to Canada, the Great White North, and talk about their largest bookstore, Indigo Books and Music. They got hit with a cyber attack, causing them to make their basically put their website offline to customers, and they could only accept cash payments in stores. Now, the exact nature of the incident is unclear at this time, and Indigo is not ruling out that the attackers may have stolen their customer data. This past Wednesday, they announced that technical issues, quote unquote, were preventing their website, preventing access to the website, and customers at physical stores could only pay cash. On top of this, the company announced that their gift card transactions were not possible, and there may be delays with online orders. Obviously, a huge hit for Canada's largest bookstore. So if you're a patron of Indigo Books and Music, you better walk into the store and pay in cash, eh? So, moving on, let's talk about Money Lover. This is an app for both Android and iOS, a flaw in Money Lover's financial app for, as I mentioned, Android, iOS, and Windows as well, allowed any logged in member to see the email addresses and live transaction metadata for other users' shared wallets. That's right. If you log into your account, you can see other people's information. They could see yours. Money Lover is a finance app that allows users to manage their expenses and budgets that have basically been downloaded 5 million times on the Play Store, also available for Apple as well. So heads up to you, if you use the Money Lover app for all your financial organization needs, everybody could see your stuff. You could see theirs. Moving on. Oh, and hopefully they got that cleaned up if you're still using it. Moving on, let's talk about British engineering firm Vesuvius. Now, this information was behind a paywall, but they had an incident that they publicly disclosed this past Monday, 6 days ago or so. And obviously, as I get more information on this, I will let you know and probably update you next week. But heads up to basically British engineering firm Vesuvius and its customers. Moving on, let's talk about, and staying in the UK, a member of Parliament, Stuart MacDonald. Now, he told BBC his emails were stolen, and he fears they might be made public. Now, Stuart MacDonald, member of Parliament, said that this hack took place in January, and he wanted to preempt any publication from sharing his info. The group responsible is believed to be linked to Russian spy services, and the UK Cyber Defense Agency has warned about targets on politicians in recent weeks. Now, here's what happened. On January 13th, Mr. MacDonald was walking basically down the street when he received a notification on his phone. There was a message in his private email account. He glanced at it, and it was a member of his staff, rather from a member of his staff. There was nothing suspicious about that, and it came from a staff member's real email account. The message said there was a password-protected document attached, which had a military update on the statuses of Ukraine and that war. Obviously, that made sense to the member of parliament for Glasgow South, because he has taken a close interest in Ukraine for a number of years, receiving an order of merit from the Ukrainian government on top of everything else. Naturally, he clicked on the link, and here we are. So there you go. Even if it's coming from somebody you know, make sure you're vetting it, because we all have to do it at this point. I don't care if it's your mother. Oh, actually, probably if it's your mother, definitely vet it as well. Moving on. I want to give you a quick update on LastPass. Now, this is quick, but it's important because fresh investigations have now revealed that the attack, that goes back a few months, has some more information. The attacker apparently obtained the passwords of at least 30 million users and 85,000 companies from LastPass, meaning they're basically cracking these things and getting this information from everything that I am reading. I am looking for more sources on this. I have found two so far that have made this claim, but if this is true, and again, I'll probably be updating you next week as these things are always evolving, this is a huge problem, and I'll reiterate again, it's really time to move off of LastPass. They weren't nearly as transparent, as people thought they were. I was pushing back since August, and here we are. So hopefully you're off of LastPass now, and we'll keep moving on. And finally, and we've got a couple finalies for you here. We're going to be talking about Italy, the country of Italy. And this one is, Well, it's interesting. And here's what's going on, because thousands of computer servers have been targeted basically by a global ransomware attacks, basically. And what we are talking about is specifically VMware ESXi servers. And this is according to Italy's National Cybersecurity Agency, or ACN, talking a week ago Sunday, warning that organizations must take action to protect their systems. Now, a hacking attack basically is sought to exploit the software vulnerability, and they're pushing this out on a massive scale. That is the basis for what I'm going to be talking about here, because also last Sunday it was reported, and I quote, network data from NetBlock shows internet across Italy has mostly been restored after 5 hours of outages. That's right. Italy had a nationwide massive outage for 5 hours of its internet infrastructure. Reuters confirmed that the outage was due to a, quote, international interconnection problem. NetBlocks, though, tweeted out, and I quote from that day, confirmed, hashtag Italy is in the midst of a major internet outage with high impact to leading operator Telecom Italia. Real-time network data show national connectivity at 26% of ordinary levels, incident ongoing, meaning 74% of the entire country had a massive, massive outage. This is still being investigated, but if this is true, what we are potentially looking at here is a massive cyber attack against a national infrastructure. And Italy is not 100,000 people somewhere. They are millions of people in Italy. So this is a huge, huge thing. We're going to see where this goes. I'm going to keep an eye out on this. I might actually be doing just independent videos and podcasts on this, or even talking about it on my radio show, which actually I'm doing tomorrow. So we will see where this goes. But if this is true, this is a major implication. Is this a test run by something like Russian intelligence to see how they can be messing with NATO countries as they're continuing to evade Ukraine and as NATO countries continue to support? We have a massive amount of infrastructure here in the United States. This has been deeply concerning to cybersecurity professionals. So we're going to see where this goes. But this is potentially a huge, huge problem. And Italy may be one of those things where we're looking at this as a potential new modern bellwether for massive infrastructure on a national level cyber attacks. We'll see. Hopefully it's just, you know, somebody tripped and sneezed on the server and spilled coffee on it and it just screwed everybody up. Cascading issue. But if it is some kind of cyber attack, it's going to be huge. And obviously it's going to be affecting potentially more countries in the future as they continue, meaning the intelligence agencies that are adversarial to, let's say, Italy and her allies, being the United States and everybody else, this could be a huge thing. I will keep you up to date, as you know. And finally, we have to talk about Dingo cryptocurrency, because this is why we can't have nice things, including cryptocurrency. And here's what's going on, and this is just head shaking, because the originator of the Dingo token, that's a cryptocurrency with a purported market cap of $11 million, had included a backdoor in the code to charge each transaction a fee up to 99% worth of the token. That's according to cybersecurity firm Checkpoint Software, which issued basically an advisory warning potential investors of this scam. And that's essentially what we're talking about here. Now, while documents describing the Dingo token claim that the scheme charged 10% per transaction, Checkpoint researchers found 47 transactions where the total fee per transaction had increased to 99%. The creator of Dingo also set the fee of to 99% for future transactions, essentially stealing the funds of any traders of cryptocurrency. According to the analysis published this week by Checkpoint, the Dingo token creator had already transferred previously collected funds to other accounts, leaving no money for anybody holding Dingo tokens, according to, again, Checkpoint Software. And this is exactly what we're talking about. People ask me, well, you know, will cryptocurrency ever go mainstream? And the short answer is only until it gets regulation. Because if I can spin up a cryptocurrency, basically change the coding and say, hey, you know, while I'm telling the public, you know, it's a couple percent in transaction, 10% in transaction, and then jack it up to 99% per token, all I'm doing is ripping off people. That $11 million market cap is kind of pointless when $10.8 million of it is transaction fees going to the creator, who is then basically washing it and funneling it out somewhere else. And so this is a problem that we have. You want actual investors. You want, you know, let's say, you know, people over 65 to really, you know, dig in as a long-term safe investment. Cryptocurrency isn't that. And that's the problem we have, not to mention the volatility of this. And so this is a huge issue. And so if cryptocurrency is going to go mainstream, and I do think think at some point it will. It's these kinds of things that have to be regulated and these kinds of things that have to be prosecuted. And with the internet, for all we know, this dude is sitting on some island somewhere where he'll never be reached, just living off his 10.8 million out of 11 and God knows what else. So that is a huge issue. Those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive absolutely has to be on the Chinese spy balloon. At this point, we've all heard of the Chinese spy balloon. But interestingly enough, there's more to this story than just that, especially from the cybersecurity standpoint. We're going to get to that. But first, let's start with a timeline here. And here's what happened in those events, if you didn't know, thanks to Politico and other reporting organizations. This is an interesting one because it really started on January 28th. That was a Saturday. The balloon was first detected over U.S. airspace high over Alaska, just north of the Aleutian Islands. So the U.S. military's North American Aerospace Defense Command, which also includes Canada, closely tracked the balloon, basically assessing that it posed no threat or intelligence risk to both Canada or the United States. Now, fast forward to Monday, January 30th, NORAD basically tracks the balloon as it travels into Canadian airspace. Officials determine that it is used for spying as it carries surveillance equipment, including a collection pod and solar panels located on the metal truss suspended below this balloon. Now, based on its small motors and propellers, officials also assess that it can actively be maneuvered to fly over specific locations, meaning it's just not floating. It has propellers. You can move this thing, so it could move back out of the airspace. Now, the balloon is part of a Chinese fleet developed for spying, which over the past few years have been spotted over countries across five continents, including Asia and Europe. Now, balloons were observed over the United States three times in the Trump administration and once before at the beginning of the Biden administration. And so what makes this new encounter different was the long duration that this one had over the continent. In other words, it didn't come in and out of our airspace or over our land briefly. This one went basically across the entirety of North America. Now, on January 31st, which was a Tuesday, the balloon re-entered U.S. airspace from Canada over northern Idaho. The Defense Department alerted President Biden, who asked the military for options about shooting it down. The Pentagon then began working to keep the balloon from collecting sensitive information from sites on the ground. This was a quote-unquote straightforward situation because a senior administration official said, and I quote, because we could track the exact path of the balloon and ensure no activities or sensitive encrypted comms would be conducted in its vicinity, end quote. And we'll talk about that after all of this. Now, on Wednesday, February 1st, Pentagon officials were alarmed as the balloon started to make its way over Montana, which is home to Malmstrom Air Force Base. That is one of three sites that operates and maintains our nation's silo-based intercontinental ballistic missiles. That's right. If we're going to be launching nukes at somebody, they're coming from Malmstrom Air Force Base, along with a couple of others. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin then convened military and civilian leaders, including U.S. Northern Command Chief General Glenn Van Herk, as well as a Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley, to discuss the situation. All flights at the Billings-Logan International Airport were then grounded for about 2 hours as authorities basically weighed what to do. The military scrambled F-22 fighter jets just in case the decision was made to shoot it down. Now, ultimately, Generals Milley and Van Herk recommended against shooting basically this balloon down over the land due to the risk of civilians and falling debris. Defense officials estimated the debris from the balloon, which was the size of roughly three buses, could fall in at least a 7-mile radius. So obviously, if you're putting it over even Montana, which has a lot of big sky country, not a lot of people, but you look at local areas around Malmstrom, like Great Falls and some other places, it's very possible that somebody could be struck or civilians could be struck by this falling debris from this balloon. So the president directs the Pentagon to come up with options to shoot down the balloon as soon as it's safe to do so over U.S. territorial waters, and in a way that allows them to actually recover the balloon intact, or as close to intact as they can, specifically the surveillance payloads. Now, he also directs the military and intelligence community to monitor the balloon to gain insight into its capabilities. NASA begins analyzing and assessing the possible debris field based on the trajectory of the balloon, the weather, and airship's estimated payload, and on and on. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and Deputy Secretary Wendy Sherman met with Chinese embassy officials. Then on Thursday, February 2nd, the Pentagon issued a statement that a high-altitude Chinese surveillance balloon entered U.S. airspace. Lawmakers called for briefings and began criticizing the Biden administration for not shooting it down. Reports emerge of a second balloon observed flying over Central and South America. The military was continuing to work on options to bring the balloon down safely, and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan was updating the president regularly on that day. Now, Secretary of State Blinken decides to postpone his planned trip to China, and senior leadership across the Biden administration agrees. Then on Friday, February 3rd, a Chinese foreign ministry releases a statement acknowledging the balloon is Chinese, but claims that that basically it's a civilian airship used to collect weather data. China says it entered U.S. airspace accidentally and expressed regret. But U.S. officials pushed back, saying that the balloon is clearly used for surveillance and in this breach, is a clear violation of U.S. sovereignty. Now, President Biden is briefed on Friday night on the plan to shoot down the balloon on Saturday over Wilmington, North Carolina, including the aircraft or what aircraft will be used to take it down and what naval vessels will be used to recover it, as well as the initial intelligence analysis of its capabilities. President Biden approves the plan. Now, throughout that night on Friday, February 3rd into Saturday, the National Security Council and Pentagon work to ensure all measures are in place for this plan to succeed. And then on Saturday, February 4th in the morning, President Biden speaks with Austin and Sullivan in multiple times about this mission. Later, Biden pledges, quote, "We're going to take care of it," end quote, when asked about the balloon during a stop in Syracuse, New York. He flashes a thumbs up to reporters when asked if the military was going to shoot it down as he boards Air Force One at Hancock Field in New York. The FAA temporarily grounded flights at airports in Wilmington and Myrtle Beach, as well as Charleston, South Carolina. This allows the military craft F-22 stealth fighters from Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, and F-15 from Barnes Air National Guard Base in Massachusetts, and a tanker aircraft from multiple locations to get into position. At 2:39 p.m., the F-22, flying at 58,000 feet, shoots a single AIM-9X Sidewinder air-to-air missile that takes the balloon down, which is flying at an altitude of roughly 60 to 65,000 feet. The military begins efforts to recover the balloon, which fell 6 nautical miles off the coast in an estimated 47 feet of water. The amphibious ship USS Carter Hall is a destroyer, as well as a destroyer USS Oscar Austin and cruiser Philippine Sea are in the area to aid with the recovery. Navy divers were in position to descend to the site if needed. Once the balloon was recovered or is recovered, the intelligence community obviously will begin the efforts to analyze this. Later that Saturday, China issues a statement calling the shootdown a violation of international practice and threatened repercussions. The U.S. government spoke directly with Beijing about the mission. The State Department briefed allies and partners around the world. And so that was the first possible incursion in the last, you know, 9, 10 days or so. I am talking to you right now on February 13th. So if you're listening to this broadcast not on February 13th, you're probably listening to it whenever it airs on your local radio station. Now, on top of that, excuse me, in a New York Times article by Julian Barnes and Adam Goldman, they wrote that on Friday, the U.S. military shot down that unidentified flying object over the Arctic Ocean, and then troops with U.S. Northern Command were working near Dead Horse, Alaska, with Alaska National Guard units, the FBI, and local law enforcement to recover another object and determine its nature, according to essentially officials. Then on Saturday, another American F-22, which basically was part of the North American Aerospace Defense Command, as I mentioned, jointly operated between U.S. and Canada, downed an object over the Yukon Territory in Canada. NORAD sent American fighter jets, which were soon joined by Canadian fighters, to track the object. The F-22 also used a Sidewinder air-to-air missile to down that object over the Canadian territory, same type as I mentioned on the original one and also the second one. The U.S. took down another object then on Sunday over Lake Huron using an F-16, also Sidewinder air-to-air missile. And so we've got, on top of the original balloon that basically captured the world, even SNL was making fun of it, which it actually was pretty hysterical because they made the whole point about TikTok collecting data and all of that, and I couldn't have laughed harder. But we've got three additional ones, as I just mentioned, across Alaska and Canadian airspace, and obviously that's a huge problem. And so the question then became, why were these shot down faster than that original Chinese spy balloon? Well, the spy balloon traversed the country before it was taken down. Basically, it allowed American officials to observe it and collect intelligence. It was also flying at 60,000 feet, so it did not pose a danger to civilian aircraft. So if you are, for example, flying, commercial, you're flying United or whatever airline from point A to point B, you're usually at somewhere between 20 and 30,000 feet or under 40,000 feet max. So 60,000 feet is well above civilian air flight. Now, the object above Michigan, though, which was that last object around Lake Huron, was flying at 20,000 feet. And so that was a potential danger to civil aviation. U.S. and Canadian officials said that those objects shot down on Friday and Saturday were also flying lower than the original spy balloon, and so civilian aircraft again was considered in danger. And they basically closed the airspace around Michigan and Lake Michigan at that time. And if you've ever flown into O'Hare Airport, Chicago, you know that like basically like half the flights, you actually line up over Lake Michigan to fly basically through downtown Chicago to land. And so all of that was closed, obviously rerouting flights all through the area. So the Pentagon says that it's a spy balloon. China says it's a monster airship with a civilian craft designed to monitor weather systems. And even if any of that turns out to correct, the newer, smaller objects I just talked about still remain unexplained. We don't have answers to that. And so by virtue of that, as a response, the Biden administration essentially started issuing sanctions against Chinese corporations. And here's what happened with this, because the Commerce Department announced new rounds of sanctions that passed Friday, like 3 days ago, the 10th or so, targeting six Chinese aerospace companies that it has identified as supporting the nation's military reconnaissance balloon program. These firms will join a growing list of companies based in China that the United States say pose a serious threat to national security. The sanctions announcements came just after the F-22 shot down that high-altitude object, and here we are. And so to quote Alan Estevez, Undersecretary of Commerce for Industry and Security, basically he said, and I quote, the PRC, or People's Republic of China, use of high altitude balloons violates our sovereignty and threatens U.S. national security. On top of that, he said, and I quote, today's actions make clear that entities that seek to harm U.S. national security and sovereignty will be cut off from accessing U.S. technologies. In other words, if you're helping the Chinese build spy balloons, no U.S. tech for you. Now, the craft that was shot down Friday, as I mentioned, was floating off the coast of Alaska, and obviously the big one was shot down again in South Carolina. Now, the White House was hesitant to characterize, though, the last incident as a balloon. Quote, we're calling this an object because that's the best description we have right now, end quote. That's according to National Security Council spokesman John Kirby, adding that U.S. officials did not yet know which nation or group was responsible for that one. While the Chinese took basically responsibility for that first balloon, they have been quiet apparently on the last three. Now, the new sanctions, or whatever the object is, now the new sanctions reflect an administration's renewed focus this week on, or last week I should say, on China's unmanned airship surveillance programs. According to Matthew Axelrod, Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Export Enforcement, and I quote, today's actions demonstrate our concerted effort to identify and disrupt the PRC's use of surveillance balloons, which have violated the airspace of the United States and more than 40 countries. Now, that's the primer. All of that is the primer to basically discuss surveillance tech that is possibly in these balloons. And here's a clue that these are actually not just like weather pattern looking things, that they are actually surveillance. The pilots of the U.S. Air Force F-35 fighters sent to intercept that mystery object over Alaska last Friday said that whatever it was had been, quote, interfering with the sensors of their aircraft, end quote, before they shot it down. The U.S. Air Force pilots who shot down the object over Alaska, quote, were not able to identify identify what they saw, end quote. And that's according to CNN's Natasha Bertrand. And I continue to quote Ms. Bertrand. When the U.S. first detected this object over Alaska on Thursday, they sent up F-35 jets to see what was going on. And these pilots reported very conflicting accounts. Now, the pilots basically of these stealth fighters said, quote, that this object was actually interfering with the sensors of their aircraft, and they couldn't figure out why, because there was no identifiable kind of surveillance equipment on this object, end quote. So what could do this? You know, I mean, this is one of those things. And so if you're looking at the standard surveillance packages that you would be flying in a balloon, there would be things like disruption for electronic warfare. But this thing could also take more accurate pictures than spy satellites since it's closer to the ground. And I've heard analysts basically say this may prove that Chinese spy satellite technology isn't nearly up to snuff if they have to get lower in orbit with balloons that could potentially be identified, as we just did, to take more accurate pictures. It could also capture data from things like cellular transmissions, satellite transmissions that are beaming up and down from the Earth to outer space. And so, you know, these are things that we can capture. If you didn't know, a lot of cellular transmissions are not encrypted. That's why the U.S. military said, well, we're just going to jam this thing across basically North American airspace until we can blow it out of the sky. It could also read or surveil things from sensitive sites like Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana. Imagine being able to get, you know, low enough with a high enough camera to basically take pictures of, you know, missile silos and other things, not to mention just floating across the United States, other sites, other military bases, capturing whatever it is, and so much more. But interestingly enough, as I'm doing research on this, China isn't the only one in this game, because according to the publication New Scientist, surveillance balloons are actually having a moment even beyond this recent Chinese spy balloon fiasco. The U.S. and U.K. militaries are increasingly funding these projects to build high-tech surveillance balloons that operated about 20 kilometers up in the air. And though Chinese officials have said that that balloon was not a spy balloon, China has also been putting greater focus on surveillance balloons as well. And if you want to know the icing on the cake on that one, China has accused the United States of illegally flying high-altitude balloons into its airspace more than 10 times since January of 2022. And these are claims that basically drew an immediate rebuttal from the White House as bilateral tensions are flaring up in the fallout of this Chinese balloon issue and all of that. I don't have time for my normal exit this time. We went a little long, so stay safe, stay online, please attempt to stay private, and I'll see you next show. Thanks, everybody.